James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman, and if you've just joined me, I've been discussing the complexities of the border situation in the US, the fact that the UN are complicit in helping to organise the influx of illegals into the US and other parts of the world as well. We also discussed the protests in Japan about the WHO treaty. My guest was US veteran and war correspondent Michael Yon. We also spoke also about American voter apathy and those elections and why it's so important that that the Biden administration is kicked out in November. I don't think that's any secret to anybody. But so if you did miss the first hour of the show, it'll be uploaded to the website in the next few hours. Just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button. And there you'll be able to watch or listen back to all of my previous shows. Right, I've got a packed hour coming up for you in the second part of this show. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by Voice of Wales, who are in London covering the Tommy Robinson court case. Tommy has said that he's going to come on the show hopefully tomorrow, but today we'll hear what's been going on in court from Voice of Wales. We heard in the first hour, Gemma Cooper broke the news that the whole case has actually been thrown out based upon a technicality, which I'm really disappointed about, to be honest with you, because, you know, whilst I think, you know, he shouldn't be in court and this really shouldn't be a thing. It's a shame that the focus has been turned away from the actual order itself and whether it's right that the police should be able to say to somebody, you're not allowed into the capital city, because those people over there organising a march are saying they don't want you there. It's absolutely ridiculous that the police have the power to do that. But instead, the whole thing's just gone away because of a technicality. So be talking to Voice of Wales today. They've been in court today. They're going to tell us exactly what has happened and what Tommy is potentially going to do next. And then hopefully we'll get Tommy on tomorrow. Then after Voice of Wales, I'm going to be speaking with Jackie Devoy, who's just launched her new film, Playing God. And the premiere has gone out in the past week. So we'll be talking all about the film, where you can watch it, and what Jackie plans to do next. Then in the final part of today's show, I'll be welcoming former nurse and advisor to the UK Department of Health, Debbie Evans, to the Freeman Report. I've followed Debbie's work for some time now, and I'm actually delighted that she'll be joining me today. We'll be talking about a few things. One of the things I want to ask Debbie is what she makes of news in the Legacy Press yesterday that leaked figures reveal 15,000 people have died in care of mental health trusts in the past year alone. Desperate families have said they've been forced to beg for treatment from overstretched medical teams. Figures, believe it or not, we've only just started collecting figures for the first time last year, which is worrying in itself. But more worrying than that, even though the NHS is collecting these figures, they haven't made them public. I wonder why. But they have been leaked now for the period between March 2022 and 2023. But potentially the most worrying part about all of this is the data excludes deaths from those receiving care from a crisis team or a perinatal mental health team of intervention care from a psychosis team. This means that 15,000 figure, actually the real figure, could be much, much higher. We've seen dozens of coroners in the past year raise the alarm about a lot of these deaths. So it's actually quite shocking that we have not got full transparency and the fact that the NHS tried to hide these figures. The other worrying thing, which is potentially not helping all of this, is vacancy levels in the community mental health teams across the country are currently running at around 12%. That's 12% of jobs that are not filled. All the while, the number of patients has increased by 11% in the past year. So what the hell is going on, and why? You know, why do we have to learn about all of this via leaked data? These are the questions that I'll be asking Debbie in a moment after we go over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news. If you want to email me, get in touch about anything to do with the show, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And as always, if you're getting a bit hot under the collar and you want to join in and vent a bit, please get yourself over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon, and you'll be able to join all of the lovely people over there in the live chat. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about,
and that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio TNT.
Right, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper. What breaking stories have you got for me, Gemma?
Well, Rishi Sunak is expected to announce later when he's on his trip to Poland, where he's just touched down with our Chancellor and with the UK Defence Secretary. He's expected to announce that the UK will spend 2.5% of its gross domestic product on defence spending over the coming years. This is news that's been welcomed by many quarters, not least the former UK Defence Secretary, James Heapy, who quit his role after the budget this year, claiming, you know, one of the things was that the defence didn't get any money. He's also standing down as an MP, but he said this is very good news. As I said, Rishi Sunak's expected to announce this later this afternoon at a press conference at a military base in Poland alongside the NATO Secretary General. He's also going to be there meeting the Polish PM, Donald Tusk, and he's also then officially going to announce a further $500 million for Ukraine, taking the total up to $3 billion this year alone. Also, the big story, which we touched on in the last hour, is, of course, that five people, including a little seven-year-old girl, have died trying to make the crossing from France to England across the English Channel, part of the small boats crossings. The deaths came just hours after Rishi Sunak's Safety of Rwanda bill got passed in Parliament. And then Rishi Sunak has this morning, or the early afternoon, said he wants to put compassion at the heart of his policies and stop the people smugglers bringing people over. And also, an inquest into the deaths of three aid workers who were killed in Israeli airstrikes in Gaza on the 1st of April has opened today. It has ruled that the court heard how all three died from their blast injuries. It's opened and it's been adjourned to a later date, as is normal with inquests. The coroner heard the evidence there, how they died. More evidence to be heard when the inquest reopens in probably what will be a few months' time now. But obviously that was a big global story, and many eyes were on the families of those aid workers this weekend, who played tribute to them in a special event for their memory on Saturday.
Gemma, I'm going to talk about Rishi Sunak again. It's quite shocking, isn't it? £3 billion now that the UK has given, or will have given, after this latest amount to Ukraine. Quite shocking, really. And of course, you know, the US has just sent a further $60 billion to Ukraine. I'm just appalled at this, because I think it's the same situation in the US as it is in the UK. Nobody has voted for this. There is no mandate for these politicians, for Rishi Sunak, who himself hasn't been elected prime minister, to be giving away UK taxpayers' money, essentially, as far as I can see, so that Ukraine men will go to the battlefield and lose their lives. Because NATO and the US want a proxy war with Russia. Quite shocking, really. Is there any other detail on what the agenda will be in the meeting with Donald Tusk? Of course, Donald Tusk is another globalist WEF man, and also a European EU man. Are there any kind of details on what the meeting is going to focus on, Gemma?
No, there are no details. That just that he will be meeting with Donald Tusk. But there's been a lot of talk about defence ahead of this flight to Poland today. First of all, it was the 500 million extra for Ukraine. And now he's going to announce in Poland alongside NATO, the Secretary General, increased defence spending across the whole of the UK. So I wonder if it's kind of a show of solidarity between these countries, kind of a squaring up to what we're continually being told is the Russian threat. You know, we can't let Ukraine because Russia will then come for the rest of us. But there are no actual specific details. There is a big press corps that has travelled over on the plane with Rishi Sunak. And we're expecting to get little tidbits thrown our way from them with a very mainstream and controlled spin. Obviously, you don't travel with the Prime Minister unless you're prepared to, you know, do what the Prime Minister and his PR team want. Mm. But we will get little snippets and we will get little nuggets of detail, which we can maybe dig behind possibly tomorrow, depending on what comes out. I mean, certainly this announcement about the 2.5% of GDP to be spent on defence has been welcomed across many quarters, in military quarters, and obviously, as I say, former defence secretary minister James Heapy, who quit under some fanfare actually just a few weeks ago, probably sort of realizing that this might as well, like Rwanda, be a vote winner. I don't know if the British public have put defence spending at the top of their agenda. Immigration certainly, and the NHS. Probably what the electorate want to focus on more, and possibly the state of Britain's roads. Shocking report out this morning about the state of potholes and how much money we need to repair our potholes and the damage it's doing to millions of drivers' cars. You know, things like that, the British public get very hot under the collar about, actually. Maybe $3 billion for that wouldn't go amiss. But no, it's all going on weapons and arms contracts. So, yeah, there may be more detail on the meeting tomorrow. He may stay 24 hours or so, and he has got a big press pack, so we might get a bit more even later on, James.
I just wish they'd stop wasting billions on defence projects in the UK. We've got them two aircraft carriers, one that keeps on breaking down, constantly back into port for repairs. And the other one, I think, has been mothballed because they haven't got enough service personnel and enough money to actually run it. And these are big bits of kit. They cost billions and billions of pounds. So I don't think there's any need for the UK to spend to increase its spending on defence. I just think we need to spend the money on the right things in the first place and stop giving billions away to Ukraine as well. Right, Gemma, we've got to move on because I've got three different guests on today. But thank you very much for those stories and look forward to speaking with you again tomorrow. Right, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to have Voice of Wales. They've been at court all day with Tommy Robinson. So we'll be getting an update on what's been going on there right in a second, right here on TNT.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
All the focus of the West, of Washington and its allies, are all focused on Israel right now to support and help Israel and to somehow contain and deter Iran. Okay. So that means that Russia kind of has an open field with regards to what it wants to do. So think about that for a moment. Could we have a situation in this new world, this multipolar world, where the Iranians and the Russians, they're allies, and certainly Russia's not going to slap Iran on the wrist for this latest salvo against Israel? Why? Because it absolutely ties up the United States and its allies right now in the Middle East.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
From weather and traffic reports
to news of political developments,
we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
So many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats,
online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre. Surtout que je m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez, and normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Our next steps to space.
This time we go back to the moon to learn to live, to work, to invent, to create.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. Okay. So we heard new breaking news in the first hour of the show that the whole case against Tommy Robinson has been thrown out. Apparently, it's because of a technicality, because the police officer in the case wrote put the wrong date on the order, telling him that he couldn't be in London. But anyway, to talk about all of this, I'm going to be talking with Voice of Wales, Stan and Dan, who've been in the court with Tommy today. Welcome to the Freeman Report, boys.
Hello, James.
Happy St. George's Day.
Yes, of course. Yeah, happy St. George's Day. So, guys, tell us what's been going on today.
Well, today was a lot of waiting around. Tommy's KC had to put his submissions in, and then the CPS would put theirs in. The judge would have to make a decision based on these two arguments, whether the case was to go ahead. It was clear from, 1 o'clock yesterday before lunch that this case shouldn't be going any further. Or, you know, they did drag it out yesterday. Today, a lot of waiting around. The judge came back in and basically said no case to answer for, no evidence to actually convict Tommy.
Yeah, there was a whole series of catastrophes, really, James, in the respect that the inspector, first of all, said that he was dyslexic. He said that he had a dying battery on his laptop, but he could not explain why there was a version one and a version two
of the order.
Of the order, and that the version one order had disappeared. The version one order said 2 o'clock on the date and timestamp.
Right.
But it then changed to 10:14.
Yeah, on version two. But this
on
is the
version two.
This is the dispersal order that was given. Now the first date, the version one, was 24th of November. The incident with Tommy was the 26th of November. So they were trying to use the dispersal order that was 2 days before the incident he even happened. So it was, you know, it was flawed from the off.
Yeah.
So what's the, I mean, well, first of all, I'm assuming that Tommy's really, really pleased that all of this has gone away. But he must be pretty, pretty angry as well that he's been dragged to court once again.
Yeah, and it's worse than that as well, because it's not just the drag into court. Because it's been ruled, the inspector stood up and he said that the order was unlawful. He said that himself. The headlines went up yesterday. Now, the worst thing about it is everything that followed that request to leave was also unlawful. So the handcuffing, the then spraying in the eyes, the restrictions not allowing him into London, into the centre.
The imprisonment,
his daughter's birthday. There's so many things that affected his life.
Yeah.
Based on an unlawful order that was given.
But it wasn't just central London he was barred from. Mm. It was, if you look at a map, it was the whole of the M25.
Yeah.
The whole area. So even parts of Watford, where he lives, more or less, Luton Watford, he could not go if it crossed the M25. It was simply outrageous. Mm. Nobody has ever had such restrictions in a country where we're supposed to have a democracy.
Mm. Yeah, has there been much talk? I'm pleased that Tommy's got off. It was an absolutely ridiculous situation, this whole thing. But has there been much talk about the fact that, or questioning of the order in the first place? Obviously, it's a technicality, the reason why it's unlawful, but has there been any talk in the court at all about whether this is an appropriate use of police powers?
Yeah, well, it wasn't, I wouldn't even say it was a technicality that it was unlawful. It was the whole order itself. So there's certain things that the police are supposed to follow. So they've got the Home Office antisocial behaviour guidance. You've got the Royal College of Policing guidance. We've got all this literature now as well. Some things when you're asking someone to leave is you've got to ask them if they are without good reason.
Yes.
So you have to leave without good reason. Now, in the Home Office guidance and the Royal College of Policing guidance, being a member of the press and working is a good reason. Now, Tommy said multiple times to the inspector who did the arrest, or the police who was involved in the arrest, and the answers were, I don't care. So the problem was, and what was clear in court, is that the order was, get Tommy away, by hook or by crook, get him out there.
Yeah.
And so the police, they just did not follow policy at all. They took the orders, they followed the orders from above, and that's all their orders was, is to get Tommy out.
And the other thing about that, James, was this, that the inspector kept saying, oh, that's an operational learning.
Yeah.
Every question that he couldn't answer, he said, oh, thank you for that, Judge.
Yeah.
It's an operational learning.
Yeah.
But the answer that Dan has just given. So, for example, when we stood out, came out of my flat in Swansea, the police sergeant came up to us and he was going to give us a dispersal order. And I said to him, but I live there. So he couldn't do it. And this this question rose again. The barrister, who was four steps in front of the prosecution at all stages, kept questioning people. Oh, tell us a reason why you wouldn't give a dispersal order. And they kept saying, well, if somebody lived there. And the barrister then said, but you wouldn't do that anyway if you knew they lived there.
So
it was clear the police did not know the own legislation that they operate on and their powers of arrest. So it wasn't just one technicality, James. It was a whole litany stuff.
And there's one from the inspector to the sergeant to the next police officer. Yeah. Every single one of them all failed the policies at the exact same policies.
Yeah, and the other reason why this failed, James, was they did not want for Tommy to go into the defense box and actually give his testimony, because if they'd have found that out, they first of all took him down the stairs. There was 35 seconds between issuing him with the order and arresting him, so there wasn't a good time for him to get actually out of the area. He was unfamiliar with the area. The officers were unfamiliar with the area. They've come down from Cheshire. And then they took him down an alley with no exit. And that's where he got pepper sprayed whilst he was in his handcuffs. He emerged from that tunnel with burning eyes. So they didn't want that to be in front of the public domain.
Yeah, like I said, I think the right thing has happened. It's all gone away. But it is a shame, I think, in one respect, the fact that we haven't heard that in court and it hasn't been challenged more widely. Now, very, very quickly, boys, because we've got to go to the news headlines. Is there any indication what Tommy's going to do now? Or is that it? He's done and he's just going to move on? Or do you think he's going to take any action himself?
Yeah, he's taking action. He said he's got to, because, you know, it's not just the you know, how his human rights were abused. He had to appoint this KC, you know, the KC being higher than the judge ruling on the case. And that cost him £60,000.
Yeah.
You know, and people say, you know, may say, you know, oh, why is he got to do that? Why is he asking for money? If he didn't have this quality of legal representation, he could easily be serving time now, because this KC picked apart every single flaw in the police's case. So he's got to recoup that cost. He's also got to recoup the compensation that he deserves. And he's got to make an example of the Met. But lastly, he's also doing a documentary, which is going to be released in London on the two-tier policing, which is basically a full documentary explaining through all different people how the police have abused people's human rights. So he is still in full attack mode and he's not going to let it go.
And the last thing before we go, James, is this, that he did yesterday. He safeguarded your journalism because you do not need a press card now. And that came out in court by the Royal College of Policing. They say that there's citizen journalists,
digital media,
do not need a press card. So they've got to treat you and us we've got press cards, but with a bit more respect than what they have hitherto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really interesting stuff. And of course, we spoke to Tommy, I think yesterday. He's going to try and come on the show tomorrow. So we'll get more detail then. But listen, thank you so much, Stan and Dan, Voice of Wales.
That's right. Cheers, James.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Right, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I've got Jackie Devoy sitting in the green room. We're going to be talking all about her new film, Playing God. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Check this out.
Now,
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. Russia's taken aim at the US, accusing Washington of pushing the world to the brink of nuclear war. Moscow claims to have captured another village in the Donetsk People's Republic. Germany has arrested three of its own citizens accused of spying for China. And a former White House aide who advised then-President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has been charged with child sex offences in the UK.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Now, my next guest has been on the Freeman Report many times before. She is Jackie Devoy. She's a filmmaker and writer. Welcome back to the show, Jackie.
Thank you, James. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, thank you for coming back on, because you've obviously had the launch or the premiere of your film this week, Playing God. How's it gone?
Really, really well. We had a little secret sort of private screening in Soho in the middle of London on Sunday night. I invited everyone along who was involved in the film, supporters, contributors, press, you know, radio and TV hosts. As you know, you did get an invite. But about 100 people, maybe a bit less than 100 people turned up, which was good because it was a tiny little cinema. So it was a full house and it was very well received. Quite strange because it's such a gut-wrenching, horrible, nightmarish sort of documentary that when it kind of ended, everyone just was kind of a bit quiet, a bit stunned, you know, because it was, it's not one you shout and cheer for. And you can't say at the start, oh, you know, enjoy the film, because you're not going to enjoy it. It's horrible. And it's, but it needs to be watched. It is vital viewing, I do believe.
Absolutely, it is vital viewing. I haven't seen it yet, Jackie, but I did watch your first A Good Death, your first documentary, big documentary on this topic, and that was fantastic. So I've got high expectations for this film. Remind us, I know you've been on the Freeman Report to talk about it before. Remind the viewers what the film is what topic the film is on, and tell us a little bit about, without giving too much away, what the conclusions are from the film.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were expecting a sequel to A Good Death, and it's not that at all. A Good Death I made with Iconic. It was a very, very different type of production. This one was all the vision of me and three other people, Ash Mahmood and Naeem Mahmood, who are award-winning directors, who I wanted to make the film because we saw eye to eye on pretty much everything, and Phil Graham, who's my co-producer. So it's a very different sort of production. I'm not in the film. I didn't need to be, didn't want to be. I didn't want to be in the first one, to be honest, but Jamie had a vision, and I had to do a sort of Louis Theroux style thing in that film, going to people's houses and interview them. But this time I didn't think it was right for this film. So it's an investigation into medical democide in the UK over the last 50 years. And it's giving a platform to people who've not really had a big enough platform to tell their stories before. Terrible tales of the loss of loved ones due to democide, which is death by government policy, a lot of which comes via the NHS. So it's medical democide that we're actually looking at. It is mostly the people who've lost loved ones speaking. And then we've got expert opinions from a doctor, a lawyer, a retired neurologist, stroke priest. So we've got different expert views from all angles, and of course the actual bare stories from the people themselves.
Now, the first film has been, I haven't got the viewing figures here, but I know it's been watched by an awful lot of people. Hopefully this film will be received in the same way. What do you want to happen? Because it's not just like making any old film, is it? You're making this for a purpose because you want to raise awareness, you want things to change. So what are your hopes for the film and what it will achieve?
Well, like you said, the main thing is raising awareness. I think so many people, most people have no idea of what is going on behind the closed doors of hospitals, the NHS hospitals in the UK. I think we revealed some of that, what was going on in the first film, when we were looking at only a very narrow window of time, which was 2020 and the first part of 2021. We were looking at a very specific situation with midazolam and morphine murders, euthanasia we were looking at there. But this film is much broader. We're looking at not only euthanasia and midazolam murders, we're also looking at death of people who were involved in drug trials, death by the jab, and all manner of different types of death by government, medical death by government policy, so medical democide.
And let's be clear, Jackie, how widespread is this? Because I guess, you know, with a national system in a country the size of the UK, it must be fairly easy to find areas of bad practice, because, you know, even if they're fairly small. But how widespread is this problem? Is this something that everybody up and down the country should be concerned about?
Absolutely. I mean, I hope it's not as widespread as I'm hearing. I get a lot of people coming to me on a daily basis with their stories, and people are realizing, because I think at the time, when something like this happens, a lot of the time, the families and friends don't realize that that's actually happened. Mm. And it takes a while to piece it all together, or talking to other people or seeing films such as this, where it makes them stop and think, you know, did that happen to my brother? Did that happen to my dad? You know, and it takes these sort of films and these sort of discussions to come out before people actually can realize, because it's a very difficult thing to get your head around, because it's so horrific. And no one wants to believe that the place you go to be looked after and healed is the place that is actually going to end your life. So, like I said, the euthanasia side of it was covered in the previous documentary, but in Playing God, we're actually looking at a number of different ways where people have, you know, met their demise in situations of medical negligence, medical malpractice, at euthanasia, and also medical democide.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, which I think is the reason we probably don't hear more of these stories as well, is because actually the people that are left who can tell the story, it's already a difficult period for them, isn't it? Because they've obviously lost someone close to them. The last thing most people want to be doing is, you know, talking to the press, is trying to campaign for raise awareness. So it's really, really important, I think, what you're doing here, Jackie, with this film. Now, I know the premiere only happened on Sunday, but what are you planning to do next, Jackie?
Well, yesterday we had the online premiere. It went out on UK Column, and it went out on Children's Health Defence in America. So the film's been seen by a lot of people already. I don't know how many exactly, but I'm hoping thousands already. They've been really instrumental, UK Column and Children's Health Defence, in supporting me with the film, not just financially in helping me raise funds, but also just generally, you know, getting me onto the shows and allowing me to have a platform to speak about it, about the film. So, yeah, they've been great. So it went out yesterday online all over the world, as far as I know. It's out there. And we've got links. I've got on my Twitter page, my pin post has all the links to the trailer and both premieres on UK Column and Children's Health Defence. So you can choose where you want to see it. And, yeah, if anyone wants to ask me any questions, I'm pretty much on Twitter 24/7, so you can chat to me there.
And obviously, you know, you paid for the film, the costs via crowdfunding, as you said. Can people still, if they watch the film and they appreciate your work, can they still give you some money to support maybe for your next film or to help for the cost for this one? Can they still do that, yeah. Jackie?
Yeah, we still haven't quite covered the costs for this one. I mean, there are people that I would love to pay who didn't charge or who helped, you know, in various ways. The contributors, a lot of them are still like fighting for justice and obviously need funding for that. So I'd like to help them with that if possible. Also, we're in the process of arranging screenings all over the UK. And obviously that takes time and effort and money to organise as well. So just because obviously, you know, London and the South isn't convenient for everyone. So we want to do one in Wales, one in Scotland, one up in Manchester, Liverpool. We're kind of trying to do it all over the place. So maybe down Brighton Way and Bristol. So hopefully we can cover all areas and find cinemas that will show it as well, because that has proved tricky in the past with these types of films, you know, trying to find. So if anyone knows of any cinemas or if anyone owns a cinema, if they could get in touch with me on Twitter, Jackie DeVoy1, that would be really helpful as well. And like you said, if anyone wants to donate to help facilitate that, then I look on Crowdfunder, Playing God Final Phase, and you can donate there.
Yeah, and of course in Wales here we've got Cinema and Co. So there's definitely a location here in Wales to show. Jackie, thank you so much for coming on the Freeman Report. I mean, thank you for producing this film. I'm going to go and watch it later this afternoon. So thank you, Jackie DeVoy, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks a lot, Jake.
Right. Thank you. Right, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we're going to have Debbie Evans, who's a former nurse. She's also a former advisor to the Department for Health. We're going to be talking about all of these deaths in the mental health services across the UK. Quite shocking numbers that the NHS didn't want us to learn about whilst they've been collecting the data. They've not published it, so there's no transparency there, but we've got the leaked data, so we know this is going on. So we're going to be talking all about that with Debbie Evans straight after this short break right here on TNT.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
I'm Belinda, and this is Willard, and we were adopted in 2021. When we first met Todd, he was singing a song, and I was like, wow, look at this kid with the biggest smile, and he has a big heart to match.
The energy you give Todd, you get it back from Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's a joy.
Yes,
Todd really is a great joy.
I love him. You and you.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, so we've got this leaked data now that the NHS has been collecting. They started collecting this data on deaths in mental health care services across the UK. Didn't want to publish it, though, but we've got the leaked data, so we know the figures, 15,000. And that doesn't even count all of the deaths, because there's lots, large parts of the data collection which have are missing. So we know the actual true figures are much, much higher than that. So what is going on, right? To talk about all of that, I'm delighted to be welcoming to the Freeman Report for the first time, Debbie Evans. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Debbie.
James, thank you so much for inviting me. It's absolutely great to be here. Long time overdue.
It is a long time overdue. As I said in my introduction earlier, I've been following your work for a long time now. But listen, thank you for coming on today. So let's talk about these figures then. The numbers that we do know, 15,000 deaths. But I think there's an indication that the true figures are much, much higher than that. What's going on, Debbie?
Well, there's a number of things going on, isn't there, James? And I mean, just to highlight some of those leaked figures that you were saying that were revealed in The Independent, we're looking at 137 women died between 2022 and 2023 under the care of services of pregnant women. Now, let that sink in. I'll repeat it. 137 women died between 2022 and 2023 under the care of services of pregnant women. One in 10 were already in crisis care. So it wasn't as though they were languishing on a waiting list. They were actually within the crisis care team. And one mental health trust recorded a shocking, eye-watering 500 deaths in 1 year. I mean, this is absolutely shocking. And you know, those 15,000 that you mentioned in your introduction, that's out of 1.2 million. And they were in the care of community health teams. So this was at home. And the report says that families were begging for treatment. And you were quite right when you said that you believe the figures to be much higher, because quite clearly they are so much higher. I mean, I was speaking to Ruth Raffa just this morning, actually, who founded the Scottish COVID vaccine in support group. And she said that so many of her group and also of UKCB family group, they were, first of all, when they were going for help after they'd had an injection and they felt that they had a serious adverse reaction, they were told it was in their heads. They were told it was their imagination. They were told it was a mental health problem. In fact, many of them were rooted to mental health because the doctors didn't know quite what to do with them. And then they were given a prescription of antidepressants or antipsychotics or whatever they needed just to muddy the water a bit more. People that had lost loved ones, in hospital as a result of midazolam and morphine, going through absolutely extreme grief, bereavement, questions. They were all told they had mental health problems. So, I mean, you know, how many of these mental health statistics are actually vaccine injuries and people that are grieving? And then let's not forget the dramas and the anxieties and the stresses and the traumas that went on in lockup. People losing their jobs, people losing their families, people losing everything that they had, losing their friends, their livelihoods. I mean, we always said back in the UK column, it was interesting because I was listening to an interview I did with Brian Gerrish back in 2021. And we were talking about the impact of lockups that was going to be forward facing mental health in the future, these huge statistics. And I mean, at the end of the day, James, mental health services were never good in this country, even before the pandemic. And now I've spoken to people who are actually saying that they are being diagnosed with a mental health problem when they have got physical symptoms. I mean, just to give you an example, the pandemic has caused anaphylaxis. That was what one vaccine injured person told us. Another person told us they had myocarditis. They're diagnosed with myocarditis. But for 2 months, they were told it was anxiety. So, you know, another person was told they were going to be struck off the NHS if they mentioned a vaccine. But they were okay to mention long COVID, but you can't mention the vaccine. So many people are scared. They're scared to say, actually, that they've got physical symptoms and they're being immediately, you're a mental health patient.
Do you know what, Debbie? I didn't expect this discussion to take this turn, but what you're saying absolutely chimes with me. I've got, I did a documentary a couple of years ago with UKCV family following a number of their members. And Chris is just one example of what you've just said. He went in with a vaccine injury. It was fairly clear that it was a vaccine injury, but he was gaslighted. He was actually put on, again, antidepressants. He was told that you've got anxiety. It turned out, though, that, you know, I think it was about 6 or 7 months later, he put a video on Facebook which showed some of the convulsions he'd had. And his vein in his neck was pulsating in a way that is actually, it's a real indicator of heart disease. And a doctor who saw the video on Facebook messaged him and said, mate, you've got to get that checked out. It looks like you've got heart failure on the side of your heart. So he went to see a private consultant, and lo and behold, yes, he's got 40% heart failure. That's absolutely shocking, isn't it? I said, the stories I'm hearing chime with what you're saying. How much of this increase do you think could be down to vaccine injuries?
An awful lot. A huge amount. I mean, I was speaking to Ruth Raffa just this morning, and she was highlighting mast cell activation syndrome. Now, this is a syndrome not recognized in the UK. It's only recognized in the USA. The symptoms are endless. They're absolutely endless. But of course, because it's not recognized and doctors don't know what they're looking for, many patients are being referred to a psychiatric department or to mental health. And if you go to a mental health department and you see a psychiatrist may say to you, oh, you know, the brain, your chemical brain imbalance is off. We'll give you some antibiotics. Well, how do they know? because mental health is invisible, but Guillain-Barré is not invisible. Myocarditis is not invisible. Anaphylaxis is not invisible. You know, these people are, as you said, they're being gaslit on an industrial scale. They're not being listened to, but you mustn't mention the vaccine. It's shh, don't say a word, because if you do, people are being scared. One vaccine injured person was told she was going to be struck off the NHS. If she mentioned, I mean, you can't get struck off the NHS. I think many of us wish we could, but you can't. But they were fearing the vaccine injured. Don't mention the vaccine, because we don't want to know. It's got to be mental health. And, you know, mast cell activation syndrome, people are being sent off to mental health departments to see psychiatrists. And also, if they've got different symptoms, like they've got skin itching, they'll get sent to see a dermatologist. And if they get some other symptom, they'll go and see maybe a cardiologist or somebody else. So nothing's being dealt with. Everything's being pushed under the carpet. And I believe that the mental health statistics that we're getting are way lower, just like the vaccine injury numbers. We're not seeing true games. We're not.
And of course, you know, we've had them out of work figures in the past week as well, which suggest an extra 700,000 people have gone on long-term sick who are now off the job market. Why are all these people suddenly on long-term sick? Do you think that, because I think early on in the pandemic, there might have been doctors who maybe weren't aware of what was going on because of this information vacuum that has been created by the government and the media in terms of censorship. Do you think most healthcare professionals now are aware that the number of people that have been injured by vaccine, even if they're not aware of, you know, the total number, do you think they're aware that the numbers are bigger than what the government is telling us? Because Rishi Sunak is still standing up in Parliament saying that the vaccines are safe and effective, isn't he?
Quite. They're still rolling them out. They should be stopped immediately. They should have been stopped before they were rolled out. It's as simple as that. Do the doctors know? Well, if they don't know, they should know by now. I mean, you know, they come and talk to us at the UK column. Come and talk to you at TNT. Come and talk to some of the professionals and the experts that we're speaking to. And people say to me, oh, you know, well, you can't really blame the doctors because a lot of the doctors didn't know this was a novel virus, in inverted commas. No, I'm sorry. At the end of the day, a doctor is meant to give a patient informed consent. Unless the doctor knows what they are giving the patient, they cannot give them informed consent. And when I wrote to the Royal College of General Practitioners and asked why doctors weren't informing patients of serious adverse reactions or the ingredients of the injection, I received a letter back from the RCGP, from the president, saying that doctors could not inform patients of serious adverse reactions. They could not inform patients of the ingredients because doctors weren't told. So by that, even by that default, informed consent was never an option. Because doctors don't, if you don't know what you're giving someone, how can you inform them?
Debbie, do you think we will ever see justice? I mean, look, another story that's been in the press this week is the contaminated blood, which happened decades ago. And we're only now, that isn't even sorted yet, although we are talking about it. Do you think it's going to be a similar thing with the vaccine injuries? Because it's not going to go away because of the amount of people that have been hurt by them. Do you think we're ever going to see justice for these people?
I pray, and I certainly, and I know that you guys on TNT, and I know that we at UK Column, we're never going to stop because some people talk about an amnesty. No, absolutely not. This is the greatest crime against humanity ever, against creation, actually. And, you know, I'm noticing that all the rats are jumping off the ships, aren't they? The MPs aren't standing at the next election, and we've got people retiring. Dame June Rain at the MHRA conveniently is retiring. Jonathan Van Damme has not gone off to Moderna. So they're all disappearing, and they need to be held accountable. These people have caused this. These people have to be held accountable. You know, this is Nuremberg too. How long will it take?
Yeah.
I don't know, James. This is going to affect generations to come. Generations.
And what do you think? We've got about a minute left, Debbie. What do you think of the scenes we've seen in the House of Commons? Obviously, it's been a long time coming to get that full debate on excess deaths and the pandemic response. I was expecting to see more MPs there. What do you think about the fact that it was an empty chamber again?
Shocking. And what I find very interesting was the gallery was full. There was over 100 people in that gallery. And where was Victoria Atkins? She should have been at that debate. And well done for Andrew Bridgen and for everybody that supported him. But a lot more to come on this, James, a lot more.
Yeah, there certainly is, because although this was sort of, you know, 3 years ago now, this all started. Like you said, Debbie, I'm not going to stop talking about it. And please, well, I know you're not going to either, Debbie. So let's keep at it, and hopefully we'll get justice at some point. Debbie Evans, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming on the Freeman Report, Debbie.
Thank you so much for having me, James. Lovely to be here.
Thank you. Right, that's it for me today. I'll be back tomorrow, but don't go anywhere, because we've got more fantastic shows coming up right here on TNT.